hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
And hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go Formula One podcast, a podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, a long-time pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and I'm currently in Margaret River in Western Australia.
And I'm Monique Chicardo. I'm your post-Drive to Survive fan, living in Stavanger in Norway. It's about 3 degrees right now.
Wow. What a week. It's been a big, wild week. Okay. In this episode, we're going to discuss the Qatar Grand Prix, and Monique was there, so we're going to get the inside scoop on what it's like to be at Qatar, as well as some things to see and do when you're in Qatar and some unusual laws that you need to know if you're going to go to Qatar. We'll fill you in on all the F1 news and rumours that are travelling faster than a cranky Max Verstappen. And there's a big fight on for the constructors' title and second place in the driver's standings. And we'll also talk about a new Australian Formula One driver who's going to be lining up for the last race.
Yeehaw. Oh, God. Honestly, Di, what a week in Formula One. It was huge. Obviously, we had the Qatar sprint race and the Grand Prix, which was the penultimate race of the season, before we head to Abu Dhabi for the final race of the season. And oh my gosh, like you mentioned, I was there, but it was an absolutely wild race to be there for. And I'm not going to lie, about lap 25, lap 30, everyone settled into their kind of pace, into their rhythm, and as you tend to do in a race. And there was about a minute, you know, between drivers, a minute and a half, and then things went down.
A little mirror caused so much carnage. Your seats at the race. So let's just start with that, because the photos you were posting of drivers being interviewed and getting out of their race cars, you had the most epic seats.
Couldn't have asked for better seats. I think sitting in the grandstand at any race is incredibly, incredibly exciting. There's so much action that happens on the main straight before, during, after. But we were so close to everywhere. So after the sprint race, that's where the podium pulled up. That's where we had, you know, the winners, the top three, pull up. The driver spotting, it was incredible.
It really looked incredible. And speaking of the sprint race, massive congratulations has got to go to our Australian Oscar Piastri, who took the sprint. Yes, even if it was handed to him by Lando Norris, who slowed down after the last corner of the last lap to let second place Piastri take the lead. So Lando did say it was a thank you for the Brazilian Grand Prix, where Oscar did a swap and let Lando win to help him with his driver's championship battle. I don't know. Giving somebody a sprint win as opposed to a race win, is it really payback? You know, nice gesture for sure. And the team, I did listen to the team radio today, and the team did instruct Lando to not swap positions.
It was funny listening to him after the race. Obviously, we could see them doing the interview right in front of us. It was so cool. I don't know how to take what he said, because he was like, I'm not really in it for the sprint wins, so it doesn't really matter.
And it's like, I didn't really want it, so I gave it to him. You know, that's how it came across. And that's really not, I don't know. Look, if I was Oscar, I'd be like, yeah, thanks for doing me a favour, mate. Not. Anyway, so after the sprint, which Oscar won, which was terrific, there was qualifying. It was argy-bargy in qualifying as well.
Yeah.
Where Max Verstappen qualified on pole and then was given a grid place penalty for going too slow on one of the qualifying laps after George Russell arced up and complained about it. And Max is very, very unhappy with George Russell. Headlines flying around the internet everywhere saying, I've lost all respect for George. I want nothing to do with him. I've never seen somebody try to screw someone over so badly. So
I'm not going to lie. That sentence coming from Max Verstappen is a little bit pot kettle black. I mean, if you listen to Verstappen on the radio, there are so many times even in this race, he would not let up about, I think it was about Lando.
Lando not lifting during a safety car. Yeah, exactly. But I feel like this is a kind of newish thing in the last sort of 2 years or so, where the drivers are just dobbing on each other all the time. And I'm like, dude, sportsmanship, where is it? Like, right? There's no kind of driver's code or gentleman's agreement anymore.
I mean, it's almost a little bit like diving for a penalty, right? In soccer, everyone's just trying so hard to maybe get that little bit of an edge. And if they get that edge by complaining about something, they're going to do it. So yeah, if you're listening to the driver's radio as the race is happening, all the little comments like, I honestly, you're driving so fast. How did you notice that someone next to you went out of track limits? How did you notice that?
At 320 kilometers an hour. I know, but they do. Like, Max has been known to comment about what's been on the big screen as he's been driving Grand Prix. So it's how they do that is beggars belief, honestly. But it really was a massive action-packed race. There were three safety cars and Max took the lead from the get-go. Turn one, you know, start even with that penalty starting in second place with George Russell on pole.
Down.
He did. He just, an angry Max is a fast Max, and he really just took the lead from the first corner of the first lap and hung on to the lead all race to win it.
From the get-go, he did really, really, really well in the crowd, the cheering, the excitement at lights out. It was so loud. It was very, very exciting, mainly for Max, but I think it was Hamilton that got a really terrible start as well.
Yeah,
so that's right. There was quite a few overtaking and getting their elbows out, trying to get up.
But yes, there was a lap one, the first corner, Max went from second to first. Leclerc went from third to second. Piastri also was in the mix, and so was Carlos Sainz. So it was a big first corner.
And we had Ocon and Colapinto colliding first corner. And it's been a long time since I've seen that much action in the first corner of a race. Different, the Formula 2 beforehand, we definitely saw a lot of action. That always happens. That's always a given. Those boys seem to be very, very aggressive with their driving. So if you're into watching overtakes and some really close racing, F2 is always a good one to watch. We had a collision in the first corner. So that was our first safety car that came out.
Could you see the crash from your seats, or was the corner too far around?
No, unfortunately, the corner was too far around. If you're in hospitality, that's like the ideal spot to be, obviously, because it's hospitality, but also because it's right at the very end of the straight going into the first corner. So you get to see them coming down the straight, and then you can also see all of the action on the first corner, because that's pretty much where all the overtakes, all the crashes have happened. So we had our first safety car come out on lap one, which definitely got the crowd cheering, and, well, maybe not cheering, but, you know, lots of sighs and lots of, you know, over animated people about that.
And there were three safety cars for the race. We had five DNFs during the race.
Oh, so my God.
Did not finish. DNF, for anybody that doesn't know. And then Albon's wing mirror came off during lap 30 and stayed in the middle of the track for four laps until Bottas hit it and it smashed to smithereens. And then the carbon fibre caused a puncture for poor Lewis Hamilton and Carlos Sainz. There was lots of commentary going on about why the FIA didn't call a safety car or a virtual safety car or something in order to get that mirror. But apparently it was all within the rules.
Yeah. It wasn't on the racing line, which I understand. I understand if something's not on the racing line, then they're kind of not inclined to stop the race for it. I still feel like if you've got a mirror on the track, it's not like you've got a plastic bag or something. A plastic bag is just maybe going to blow away, or it's not going to cause that much damage. Two people hit the mirror, and by the time Hamilton and Sainz both came in to the pits, they couldn't even get their tires off because their axles and their rims were so messed up because they'd had to go around the bloody track before they could get the tire off. Yeah. It was a mess. It was pretty crazy. Five DNFs, which also meant that we had only 15 cars left on the track, which, best story of the day, and it got a massive cheer, was Zhou Guan Yu finally scoring some points for Kicksauber. Oh my God.
We all love an underdog. And that was just, I was cheering for him as well. It was brilliant. Just brilliant.
Yeah. Like, how could you not? Finally, like, they've worked so hard and they're obviously, as you have put it before, driving tractors this season. So for them to wind up P8 out of 15, he was smack bang in the midfield. He beat so many drivers that we would normally see in the midfield.
He's just come into his own. It feels like that he's finally been given a race car that can do something, and he's getting results and driving pretty good races right at the very end of his F1 career, unless a miracle happens and he finds a seat for next year. 7 penalties that were dished out during the race. 7 penalties. That's massive. And, you know, 3 of them were 10-second penalties. Lando Norris got a 10-second stop and go penalty. So I think those penalties as well played in Joe's favour.
Oh, absolutely. Like the fact that there were so many safety cars, so many penalties, it was kind of anyone's race. And the 2 punctures as well. It really was anyone's race. If you managed to completely luck out and miss the carbon fiber and glass that was on the track and to hit yourself at the right time, you were right up there with having a chance. And I think Bottas after the race did say that because Zhao was the leading car and because Bottas was the one that ran over the mirror, there was a little bit of damage. All of the risk taking and all of the testing out strategy fell onto him because he was the second car. So, so they tested any of the kind of strategy calls not on him, and then he got the good strategy. So, it was really, really interesting.
Yeah, a hell of a drive from him, and he really thoroughly deserves those points and all the accolades and driver of the day, which was voted on, by the crowd. And then also big up to Charles Leclerc for doing the whole race without any water, like no drinking straw. His straw was broken, and so he could only take like a couple of sips of water during the pits. Yeah, so the top 3 finished like with Max Verstappen on top, then Charles Leclerc in 2nd place, go Ferrari, and Piastri in 3rd, the Australian. So fabulous to see Piastri on the podium. And because of Lando's stop-go penalty that he got, it meant that he rejoined the race in last position, then had to work his way up. He finished 10th. And he lost a stack of points. He did get fastest lap, so he got an extra point for that. But it means that the Drivers' Championship now is closer than ever. The title's been won by Max Verstappen, who was crowned world champion last week in Las Vegas. He's got such a massive lead to everybody else that he's unbeatable. In 2nd place is just 8 points now after Qatar, separating Lando Norris, who's leading Charles Leclerc in the driver's standings. And in the teams, the Constructors' Championship, there's just 21 points with McLaren leading Ferrari. When drivers win a race, They get 25 points. So it's going to come down to the wire. And that's what makes Formula One so exciting. And this season, especially exciting.
I think they were saying that this would be the first time in 10 years that Mercedes or Red Bull doesn't win the Constructors' Championship. That's assuming that next race we see, you know, McLaren and Ferrari fighting it out for those kind of top spots, which, if we're honest, there's kind of only one person that's scoring points for Red Bull. So,
yeah, I think Red Bull are out of the constructors' race. They're too far behind in 4th place. So I've never actually been to Qatar, only through Doha Airport, which is a beautiful airport. But you actually went to the race, Mon. Like, what did you see? What did you do? Like, what's Qatar like?
I loved Qatar. And it was so interesting because the other English speakers that we met, we start talking about Qatar and they actually lived there. And everyone that we spoke to was like, this is such a great city. And it really, really is. I think it's so laid back compared to what Dubai is. It's really laid back and it's still got culture. And I think that was one of the things that really struck me about Doha was that, you know, you've got these sections of the city that are really international, like the Pearl, which is where we stayed. We stayed at the Hilton in the Pearl. And that whole area is really, really international. And it's a little bit more relaxed in the sense that dress codes maybe aren't so strict. I mean, I still wouldn't walk around with my butt cheeks hanging out of shorts like I saw some people doing, you know, be a little bit more respectful of the culture. It's just more laid back. But then when you go into the city, you've got the old souks. Souks? I think that's how you say it. don't come at me for my pronunciation. I'm trying. So you've got like the souks and just walking around there, you could not wipe the smile off my face. It was so beautiful. The smells and everyone wearing their traditional dresses, and the men wear the long white robes with, I've forgotten the name of the beautiful headdress that they wear. And everyone just looks so regal. We even saw a guy walking around carrying his eagle. So like super cool, right? So you've got like all of that. Then you've got the really modern sections and the really modern parts, which the Pearl, where we stayed, is. And you've got all these crazy buildings and yeah, I don't know. It was just a really cool city. I would highly recommend traveling there, even if you're not going to the Grand Prix.
Yeah. So were there other hotels at the, like in the Pearl? Like that sounds like an expat kind of complex, like almost like a secure, not secure.
Yeah, it is. It's not a gated community, but there are certain sections that we were walking around and security guards would stop us and they'd be like, you're not allowed to go in there. And that's because they're compounds, which in the Middle East, compounds are kind of just bigger houses with security and, you know, sometimes gates. And so it's, yeah, very much like an expat area. And there were other hotels there. And the reason that we chose to stay there, I guess, was because the Pearl is kind of closer to Lasai and the circuit than what the city is. It's kind of like in between. So it was only about a 25 minute drive from the hotel to the circuit. Although obviously, if you're in the city, it's more like a 40 minute drive. But there are hotels even closer in Lasai. It's like a university kind of community, very, very quiet, very relaxed. And there are hotels there too. But I would highly recommend Hilton the Pearl, because every morning when we came down, there were people in team uniform. So not drivers, but like if anyone follows Formula 2, the Campos team, we saw every morning in their get up with their backpacks on. We saw Kick Sauber team members, McLaren. And I think we saw Haas one morning as well. Espen said that when he was in the elevator with one of the Campos or a couple of the Campos team members, they were catering. So I don't know what everyone else did, but it was so cool to see teams there.
Yeah, rubbing shoulders with the teams in the same hotel. I mean, it sounds like the Hilton in the Pearl is a really good option if you're going to the Qatar Grand Prix.
It is. It's really affordable in the grand scheme of hotels in Doha as well. You know, there's six-star hotels that are very, very expensive. But I think one of the things you have to be aware of is that if you're booking a hotel as a non-married couple to book into places like the Hilton that are, you know, international global brands, not a Middle Eastern brand, because you're not allowed to stay in the same room as an unmarried couple in those kind of local hotels. It's against the law. So at the Hilton, it's pretty much a free, that sounds terrible, not a free for all in who stays in your room.
Yeah, but they don't have the same strict policy as what?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. Even
another reason for Espen to get down on a bended knee.
Exactly. It makes traveling to the Middle East a lot easier. But like at the Hilton, there was a pool bar, there was a sports bar. Alcohol is readily served. It's not a no-go, which obviously being a Muslim country, you don't see alcohol around outside. Even the race was a dry race. Not one single place sold even zero alcohol, like 0% alcohol. It was just tea, coffee, and Red Bulls and sodas, which made the race really nice, actually. I'm not going to lie. The toilets were so clean. There was no, like, from what I could see, there was absolutely no untoward behavior. But at the hotels, you can, if you want a wine or a beer, you can have that. You can wear bikinis at the pool. You can have your shoulders out and, you know, your knees out. If you really want to get your cleavage out, go for it. It's the hotel. But that's the sort of thing that you just need to be mindful of when you're not at the hotel, is to just make sure that you're being respectful. So, yeah.
And you did say that, you know, from where you got dropped off with your Uber at the track, there was a walk from that place to the track or to the circuit, but that you had to go and buy an emergency pair of sneakers, of runners for that walk. You know, the old sandals weren't going to cut it. Yeah. So what's shopping like? Like, where did you buy your runners from? Like, is it big shopping malls like Dubai, or is it,
So unfortunately, we didn't have the most amount of time to kind of get out and explore fully. So I have, but, you know, we did still get to go shopping, obviously. And where we were, about a 5-minute drive one way, there was a shopping center that it was very glitzy, very clean, had some beautiful sports stores where I got my sneakers. But
Embrace the comfort. It's very practical, very sensible.
Look, sensible for race day, yes. But yeah, that shopping center, it had like a Mango. It had quite a few of the kind of big international stores. And then about 5 minutes the other way, not even, there was a luxury shopping center, Galeries Lafayette, which is actually Parisian.
Yeah, it's French. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was the luxury shopping mall. So if you want your Dior's, if you want all that sort of stuff, that's where you go for that. And then we also went to the souk in the city, which if you want to buy a beautiful, you know, ornate abaya, actually, I don't know if abayas are the all black ones. But anyway, if you want to buy a beautiful, like ornate, you know, modest kind of dress, that's where you go for that. So yeah, there was like lots of different things, because I was actually wondering, there are so many people in Doha that don't wear, you know, the black abaya or chador or whatever the kind of robe they choose to wear, and they wear jeans and stuff like that. So there's obviously places to go shopping like that, and we found them. So, but fun fact, 89% of the population in Doha is international. So only 11% are Qatari.
Wow, that's like Dubai. The UAE is the same as hardly any Emirati nationals. They're all expat, all brought in workers. So yeah, wow, interesting. Yeah, I kind of imagined Qatar as being quite similar to Dubai, which I've been to several times. I haven't been to Abu Dhabi though.
And me either. I'd really like to, but yeah, I feel like Doha and Dubai have a lot of similarities in the fact that they are very international. But I think one of the big differences for me with Doha is that culture just seems to be a lot more present without having to go and seek it out. You know, it really was so, so beautiful to go into the markets and see all the men walking around in their beautiful white robes and headdresses, and the women, that was just so beautiful. Like they wear a beautiful face of makeup, and then they've got their long flowing robes. When you're there and being immersed in all of that, it feels so special. It's so special. So yeah, I didn't know what to expect going to Doha, to be honest. I think there is a lot of conversation and kind of stuff out there about how strict some of the rules are, and, you know, possibly some not great stories coming out about the, you know, women and their rights and, you know, some of the things that happen there. But it's, when you're there, it's absolutely not the case. It's not super strict. It's not anything to be fearful of. Like it just feels like any other place, really. You've just got to be respectful of the culture, like anywhere you go.
Good to know. All right. Well, we'll have to put that one on your travel radar if you're interested in seeing
a Formula One race.
Yeah, or interested in going to Qatar.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the good things is that the tickets to the Doha Grand Prix, in the grand scheme of tickets to races, a lot cheaper than if you want to go to somewhere like Silverstone or to Las Vegas Grand Prix, or if you want to go to Monaco, the tickets are a lot cheaper to get for the Doha Grand Prix. But they were my birthday present, so I'm still trying to, I think they were around $500, $550 for the 3 days. And you can only get 3 days. You can't buy an individual day ticket.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but like compared to what you paid for 1 day in Monaco, 10 years ago, the affordability is a whole other level. Obviously, the race is a whole other level too. It's they're very different.
Yeah, you're comparing
apples and oranges.
Exactly. One of the greatest races on the Formula One calendar that is the race that every single driver wants to win to a race in the desert that's there because of the money that's behind it. And, you know, so it's apples and oranges, but still it's awesome to know that Qatar is a fabulous destination to go to watch a race as well.
Qatar was probably, it was one of those destinations that I'd heard so much about. We went in very, very cautiously because everything that you hear and see is about the fact that it's a very conservative country and there are lots of rules to follow and abide by. But let me tell you that when you are there, you really, really, really don't notice any of this stuff.
Were the shuttle buses from the Hilton where you were, or were they only running from the city to the circuit?
They were running from the city. So they had the normal metro line that goes out to Lusail, which is actually like a whole other little city. There's a university there. There's lots of housing. There's lots of corporate towers, stuff like that. So there's a metro that runs from there to Lusail. And then from Lusail, there was a shuttle bus that took you to the track. So we chose to stay at the Pearl because we had heard that it is a really, really nice area to stay, which I can confirm it is. It's very laid back, very international. There's a great supermarket there. There's, you know, lots of different restaurants, which unfortunately, given the fact that the races in Qatar are night races, we didn't get the chance to go to, because by the time we got back to the Pearl, it was about 10:30, 11 at night, and we were ready for bed.
I can imagine. So it was easy to get from your hotel to Lusail?
Oh, mate, I cannot congratulate the whole event team enough. Getting there was super easy. Uber comes in like 2 seconds. The first day was a bit of a nightmare with Uber. Then after that, it all sorted itself out. So basically, you could get there on Uber and you get dropped off at a certain place. And then it was about a 15, 20 minute walk from there to the track, which 20,000 steps a day. I had to emergency purchase some sneakers, which I never wear.
Very sensible.
Very sensible around the track. The second night, it was just taxi after taxi after taxi after taxi coming through. And actually on race night, it only took us 20, 30 minutes in line and we were home.
You know, you were saying that you got pulled up by security while you were in Qatar. What happened there?
So as we were talking about, historically, there are things about Doha and Qatar. There are a lot of laws and stuff that you've kind of got to be aware of. I think some of the bigger things people are always aware of, like covering up or, you know, don't err in a mosque or things like that, which are easy to do and abide by. But the thing that I got pulled up for, which is something that I feel like most people don't know, literally not even 100 meters out of the hotel, I was carrying my DSLR, which even if I'm not going to take photos for my job to sell, I carry it because I like to take photos. I got stopped by one of the security guards and he just went, "You're not allowed to take photos on that." And I was like, "Oh, okay. Is that in Qatar?" And he was like, "You're not allowed to take photos in the Pearl." So I had to put it away. I have been told and heard stories of people posting photos from their hotels in Qatar and, you know, they've got their butt out, hanging out of their out of their bathers, or, you know, a little bit too much boob showing, or someone's taken a photo perhaps of a building they didn't realize was actually a government building or, you know, national security. And honestly, within the hour, they had police there questioning them.
Wow.
I know, right? So yeah. And it sounds really scary, but all you have to do is go, "Oh, okay, I'll put my camera away." Now that I know that, when I Googled, you know, the rules with taking photos in Qatar, there was nothing official, but there was a lot of forums about people saying, yeah, you need permits. And this goes for so many of the areas in Doha. You need to apply to different areas to get photography permits to shoot there. Even if it's not for commercial purposes, if you're carrying a camera that potentially looks like it could be, you know, you could use it for commercial purposes, then you'll get pulled up and they will question you and ask you to put it away or to ask for your permit, which I get, because you got to draw the line somewhere, right?
Yeah, and I suppose you don't want to be taking any unnecessary risks with rules and regulations like that. They could confiscate your camera. You could be dragged into a security office or police or something. So it's just not worth it, you know. So
exactly.
Yeah, but that's a really unusual rule. It's not one that I've heard of before anywhere, unless, you know, you're in a government building like the White House or Parliament House or something like that.
Yeah. And it's something that, like, I didn't know about before I went, because it's really not spoken about much, even if you're just an amateur photographer. So when we were leaving the Formula One, actually, we were standing in line next to a guy. He had a DSLR with 25 to 55 or something. And I looked at him and I was like, did you have any trouble getting that in? And he was like, oh my God, trying to get this through and tell them, because right down on the fine print of the ticket, it says that any lenses over 30 centimeters are not allowed. But if you're not a photographer yourself and you're just on the, you know, on the entrance, you're going to see that camera and go, mm-mm, you're not allowed. And he was like, I'm not even going to bring it tomorrow, because it was just too difficult trying to explain that this is actually within the rules. Yeah, they're very, very strict. And even in certain places, when the drivers were on the fan stage, one of the big swirly ramps down from where we were sitting was right next to the fan stage, and there was this great view down, and they had like five or six security guys. So if you even so much looked as if like you're about to stop and watch from there or take a photo from there, they were like, excuse me, you've got to keep moving. Excuse me, no, you're not allowed to take photos from here. And
even using your phone,
you were not allowed to stop there. And right. And I was kind of like, ah, rude. But then thinking about it, if literally everyone tried to do that, then it's just going to be a kerfuffle. There's going to be too many people. People aren't going to be able to get up and down. You know, they were even doing it along the glass at the front of the grandstand. You know, everyone wanted to have photos next to the straight when all the cars were setting up and there was so much action and there were security guards. They're like, go sit down.
Gosh. Wow. Wow. Yeah. Wow. All right, we've got F1 news and rumours. So much has happened in the last week. I don't even know where to begin.
I do. Okay, I know where to begin, Di, because I am so excited. Jack Doohan is going to make his F1 debut in Abu Dhabi. And that is where I want to start, because Jack has been a reserve driver for Alpine all of this year. And I've followed him since his F2 days, which actually wasn't all that long ago. It was just last year. But it feels like longer, because he didn't drive the 2024 season in F2. He was the Alpine reserve driver. After this weekend, you know, Ocon didn't have a great weekend at all. He was out first lap. So with his collision with Colapinto. And given the last few weeks, you know, he's been really outperformed by Gasly. And they've decided to release him early to Haas, which is very nice of them. So he can partake in his duties for Haas, who he's going to be driving for next year. So he's been released, which means Doohan can come in and test out the car before testing.
Yeah, so, and Jack Doohan is the son of five-time MotoGP champion Mick Doohan, very famous Australian. So we'll have two Aussies on the grid once again with Oscar Piastri, of course, and Jack Doohan, who's making his Formula One debut in Abu Dhabi. So Perez is under a lot of pressure. If his contract is cut short, it'll make way for another driver in the Red Bull team. And it could be anyone. It could be Kiwi Liam Lawson. I think Liam needs a bit more time at RB. Yes. Yuki Tsunoda, I really like Yuki, and he's been racing really well this second half of the season, I think.
I agree. I think he's realised he doesn't have as much to prove as he thought he did, and he's kind of settled into that role, and he's, you know, he's feeling a lot more confident in himself. He's been doing really, really well. So.
No, he has. And, you know, the rumours are that Red Bull are no longer interested in Franco Colapinto, the young Argentinian who's driving for Williams for the rest of this season. So Colapinto's without a seat for next year at the moment.
Do you know who I actually think would be a really smart move for Red Bull? Paul Aron. So he's in Formula 2. He's from Estonia. He's in rookie F2 season. He's challenging for the championship in Abu Dhabi. And he won F3.
Bottas. without a seat, hasn't got a contract with Kick Sauber, but he's likely to be back in the Mercedes family as a reserve driver for the Mercedes Formula One team, which is quite exciting. And young Mick Schumacher, who is the current reserve driver,
he's focusing on endurance from what I saw, which, yeah, great if Bottas gets his reserve role back, because it'd be so sad to see him leave. I mean, he came from Mercedes, one of the greats.
Yeah, and, exactly. Such a personality, yeah.
In Qatar, he was on the grid right in front of our seats every single time. So we got to see him walk out and, you know, hang out at his grid spot. It was just, bless him, you could not miss that mullet.
And, you know, he's an honorary Australian now as well. So we love Valtteri Bottas. The other big news to come out this week is we've got a brand new team, an extra team in Formula One starting in 2026, the GM General Motors Cadillac team. So there'll be 22 cars on the track, 11 teams in Formula One. It's essentially a team by F1 great Mario Andretti, a very famous American-Italian racing car driver. The Andretti is like a racing dynasty in the States. And he's on the board of Cadillac. And that's hugely exciting. There's rumours that Daniel Ricciardo might be one of the drivers that they choose. He's come out publicly and said he wants an experienced driver and a young driver. So let's just see.
I think that's the best option though, right? Like, not necessarily Daniel Ricciardo, but for us, yes, Daniel Ricciardo would be the best option. But to have that experience and then someone that has potential as well, that's like the ultimate. And here's to hoping. But they did say that the Cadillac team is obviously to kind of try and expand racing in America even more so, like the Formula One, which is already like, I don't know about you, but I feel like it's already really big there.
Yeah, but America's a really big place. I think there's always room for more.
I would love to see 30 cars on the track if it were up to me, because then we could have even more races to be excited about.
Now, F1 Academy, Mon, you were there in Qatar and I believe you watched the F1 Academy.
I did. Only not all of it, unfortunately, because they did cancel the race.
Cancelled race two. So for those that don't know, F1 Academy is a series to enhance diversity in Formula One. It's aimed at getting more females involved in Formula One, headed up by Susie Wolf, who's Toto Wolf's wife. She's, you know, he's obviously the principal owner of Mercedes Formula One team. Yeah, the champion was crowned at Qatar.
Yeah. So big up. I felt really sorry for it. So the champion was Abby Pulling. So she's 21, I think she is, or 23 from the UK. I feel so sorry for her because for the whole of the women's, you know, F1 Academy, because they didn't get to race their feature race. And that was after a crash in the Porsche Carrera Cup. And they needed to repair the barriers. There was not enough time to run the women's race after that. So they kind of had to crown her without any fanfare, which I feel really, really sorry for her about that. She won. And this is huge, a huge thing to have this kind of developmental series for women. Because if you don't know, women are actually able to race Formula One. It's not a men's only sport. It's just that at this time, it's generally only men that get the seats. So occasionally you see female drivers in Formula 3 and Formula 2. And I've watched two drivers in Formula 2. It's just not as common as males. Like, story of sports life, right?
Exactly. F1 Academy is a fantastic new development for Formula 1 that was introduced. This is the first season. Yep, like you said, British driver Abby Pulling, who is supported by Alpine, took the first title ever of F1 Academy.
There, we got there in the end. And then next week we go into our very, very last race of the season, which is in Abu Dhabi. We've still got two titles up for grabs. That's P2 in the driver's standings and for the Constructors' Championship. So I don't know about you, Di, but I'm gunning for... Actually, no, I do know about you. What am I talking about? I know you. You're a Ferrari fan. You're gunning for Ferrari too.
Of course I'm gunning for Ferrari. Of course, you know, like I've said it once and I'll say it again. My blood is by default Ferrari red and I'm good with that. look, it's going to be a tough battle for Ferrari. They need some luck to go their way. They need to get both drivers, Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc, need to get a good result. The McLaren drivers need to not get a good result. And I don't want to wish it on Piastri because he's Australian, but, you know, I think next race, look, it's hard to not pick Max to win Abu Dhabi. I think it would be a bittersweet end to Lewis Hamilton if he wins Abu Dhabi after what happened in 2021 and how he lost the championship to Max Verstappen on the last lap of that race in highly contentious circumstances. So I would like to see Lewis, a future Ferrari driver, win Abu Dhabi. I would, of course, like to see Ferrari, either the Ferrari drivers, you know, having Carlos Sainz win his last race with Ferrari would be also really fabulous. And of course, yes, I want Ferrari to win the Constructors' Championship.
Look, I'm also gunning for Oscar Piastri to win, because for him to win a race, like an actual race, not a sprint race, under normal conditions, he deserves another one of those. Like, you can't not gun for the Aussie. Like, he's so close, and the poor thing had to, you know, help Lando. Well, not poor thing. It's a team sport, but you know, he's had to help Lando a lot.
He's had to play second driver, yeah, which is, you know, when he's got the skills and talent to be a first driver. Anyway.
Exactly. He really does. So I want him to win Abu Dhabi. I think that would be a nice finish.
Fabulous. Well, with one race to go, we'll sign off here and we'll be back next week. But if you've got any race predictions out there, we would love to hear them.
If you want to get in touch with us with your race predictions, any comments, any feedback, anything that you want to that you have for us, you can get in touch with us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and TikTok. Just search for And Away We Go F1 Podcast. You can also email us andawaywego f1podcast@gmail.com. We'll have all the links in our show notes and you can get in touch with us there. Have a chat.
Thanks, Mon, and thank you for having us in your ears. Until next week and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato.
Let's do it.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.